Right, so before I begin, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this wonderful opportunity to be here. It's my first time in Santa Barbara, and it's really, really nice, so I hope it's not my last time. And I also would like to acknowledge some invaluable collaboration from Carlo Pence and Ganesh Ramachandran, Andreas Thomason, and Nick Shannon. So these last two gentlemen, they're sitting here in the audience. And so I'm one of the last speakers, and therefore I think I can say that this week was really, really interesting. And we learned a lot that topological physics arises in many, many fields, in photonics, metamaterials. We learned about electric multipole insulators, Fourier system, twisted bilayer graphene, and many, many more. And what I would like to go back are magnetic insulators and the excitations in magnetic insulators. So we have heard many talks about this already today, and I think this one probably is going to be very therapeutic in comparison with the spin wave, spin liquid phases. So I know that you all know Haldane's model very well, but just to put my talk in context, let me just go through it very quickly. So this was the first model proposed to realize the quantum Hall state without large magnetic field. And what we need is a honeycomb lattice that you see here. And of course, if we have electrons hopping on this lattice, we will have this band structure here with Dirac points at the K and K prime points, which is a degeneracy because of the time reversal and inversion symmetries. So if we want to open the gap here, we need to break one of those. And to make this band topologically non-trivial, we need to actually break time reversal symmetry. And this we can do by having a complex second neighbor hopping, which of course breaks time reversal symmetry, because then if I it will matter if I hop from this side to this one, or if I go back, because time reversal symmetry will actually change this complex I to minus I. And therefore, I will open this gap here. And as it turns out, I realize a Chern insulator state with Chern numbers plus minus one. And this actually is a mathematically simple model, but it's not so easy to realize, especially when it comes to electron systems. It's been realized in photonics and magnetic topological insulators and cold atoms and maybe others. And of course, it's very natural to realize it in a ferromagnet. So this actually has been introduced also by Roderick in the morning talk, but let me just go through it one more time, because I will use most of this formalism in what follows. So if you have an ordered ferromagnet that is described as this Hamiltonian, where you have a Heisenberg term and the Jaworzynski-Mori interaction on the second neighbors, then magnetic excitation, of course, corresponds to flipping a spin, and then this magnon can hop around the lattice. And as it turns out, it has exactly the same kind of Hamiltonian that the one in the Haldane's model. So we can write the Hamiltonian in this simple form, where we have some constant term, and then this D vector that couples to the vector of the sigma matrices. So the D vector actually is what's going to be important for us, because this holds all the information about the topological properties. And then the energy of these modes are written in this simple form, where we can see that, of course, when the length of this D vector becomes zero at some point in the Brillouin zone, these modes become degenerate, and we have this Dirac cone. So, of course, when the length of the D vector is non-zero anywhere, then the two modes are gapped. And in this topologically non-trivial phase, the D vector, if you plot it in the Brillouin zone, it will form a skirmion, and the Chern number is nothing but the skirmion density. Or a skirmion number, sorry, it's at the Brillouin zone. So in the experiment, of course, we cannot measure some transverse current, because these are chargeless particles, but we can measure the thermal Hall effect, which means that we put the sample in a temperature gradient, and then because of this non-trivial topology of these bands, the magnons will deflect from their trajectory, and they will curve, and we will measure a transverse heat current along the sample. And this has been actually measured in an insulating quantum magnet, this one here, which is actually just an ordered So to motivate this talk, the question is that, is there something more in the excitations of these systems? So what about if, excitations of some analytically disordered phases? For example, if we take a spill liquid, as we learned from the previous talks, they can have some very exciting excitations that are topologically non-trivial, or what happens if we take a singlet product state or maybe a quadrupolar phase. So in that case, the linear spin wave theory, as we know, won't work, and we need something else. And of course, what I would like to draw your attention to is that if in a usual ordered ferromagnet, we have one type of excitation per site, so that corresponds to one magnon per site. But of course, if we have, say, a dimer phase, then a singlet ground state, then we can have triplet excitations, and this can actually realize a spin 1 Dirac cone, which is just a generalization of the spin 1 half Dirac cone. And same is true for a trimer, and we can go, of course, to higher orders, and then what happens is that we realize this physics here with the sigma matrices to larger spin, to any spin S Hamiltonian, and then this one just becomes some constant shift times plus the d vector times the spin S matrices. And then, of course, here I will have, instead of this plus minus, I will have the SZ quantum number of the system. So then, of course, the same is true. Whenever this d vector becomes zero, then these 2s plus 1 bands will touch at a single point and form this generalized spin S Dirac cone. And because of this larger spin, we would have larger Chern numbers, because the Chern number can be expressed as minus 2m times the number of the skirmions. So for the spin 1 Dirac cone, we would have Chern numbers with plus 2, 0, and minus 2. And for the spin 3 half, we would have plus 3 and minus 3 as well. So I would like to make a little detour here and stop for a minute for this other work that we did with Carlo and Ganesh, because I think this is probably as close as it gets to reality with these topological excitations. So this model for the dimers is realized in the strontium copper borate, which is an orthogonal dimer system. And then what we did is that we took into account the symmetry allowed components of the Georgian-Skimori interaction. And if you do that and write up the triplet Hopping matrix, this, of course, has the same form. And these L vectors are just the SU2 subalgebra of the SU3 matrices. And then what we have here is this band-touching topological transition as a function of the magnetic field. So that's quite convenient, because we can control these topological transitions just by the application of magnetic field. And what we have is that at zero magnetic field, we see these spin 1 Dirac cones, which are then split by finite magnetic field, and we have the plus 2, minus 2 Chern numbers. And then again, at another field value, we will close this gap and then go to the trivial phase. And this actually has been seen in the experiment. So this touching point is here in the SR spectrum. It was just not appreciated as a Dirac cone before. And then this work motivated some follow-up experiments. That is a very nice work by Paul McClarty and Radu Kaldia. And they measured these neutrons. Actually, they extended this model with some additional anisotropies. And then these triplet excitations match the neutron spectrum very well. So, of course, as a fingerprint of non-trivial topology, we would have, in an open geometry, edge modes. And in this case, because we have plus 2, minus 2 Chern numbers, we will have two edge modes going in one direction and two going in the other, in the two opposite sides of the sample, which is what you can see here in this figure. And in the experiment, we would expect a thermal Hall effect of the triplet excitations. So I think why I actually wanted to mention this this example is because I heard recently that this measurement has been done, and that there is actually a finite thermal Hall effect, and also that Masuda Sensei is going to measure this material as well. So I will go back to fantasy now and just ask the question that, you know, we have this thermal Hall effect for simple magnetic excitations, like spin waves, but then how can we add a spin degree of freedom, for example, to this? Because for an ordered ferromagnet, we have one type of excitation, so there is no additional degrees of freedom. And then there is this nice idea by Katsura Sensei that we can take two layers of ferromagnets, and one layer is, say, polarized in downwards and the other upwards, and then when we flip a spin here, that would correspond to an SD plus one excitation, but when we flip a spin down here, then it will correspond to that SD minus one. So we have almost time reversal pairs. One has to add that here the time reversal symmetry is not the same as it would be, for example, for the usual case, because it also involves the flipping of the two layers. I'm sorry?
So what exactly do you mean by plus spin degrees of freedom?
Oh, okay, sorry. So probably I wasn't. So what I mean is that spin, okay, not spin degrees of freedom in the original sense, in spin degrees of freedom for the excitations that we have. So because when you have just an ordered magnet and then you use linear spin wave theory, then you have one magnon per site. And that's it, what you have. So it doesn't have any additional degrees of freedom. But for example, to realize the quantum spin Hall effect, you would need to double the problem. So you need Haldane's model twice, which means that you have to have a spin degree of freedom somehow for the excitations. And this can be realized by taking two layers. And then you know, flipping a spin up would be a different type of excitation than flipping the spin down. Words. And they're almost time reversal pairs, but when you apply the time reversal symmetry to this whole system, of course, in the upper layer you would turn everybody up, and in the bottom layer you would turn everybody down. So the time reversal operator that actually is the new time reversal operator in this system also involves time reversal symmetry plus exchanging the two layers with each other. And if you change the time reversal operator to that one, then this system, this double layer system, can be the so to speak, magnetic or the magnetic realization for this quantum spin Hall state. Sorry, I was maybe very fast. Thank you very much. Okay, so, and, you know, in this sense, we can, instead of taking maybe two separate layers that are antiferromagnetically coupled, we can take a bilayer material. And in this material, we can also have this singlet product state as the ground state. And then, of course, we will have the triplets as the excitations. And among the triplet plus and minus one could realize this time reversal pairs and the quantum spin Hall insulator state. But this is, and then, of course, we have these doubly degenerate bands for the Kagome lattice here that we show. But this is the work done by Andreas Thomassen, so I will not go into much details because he is here now, and if you're interested in this project, then please go and talk with him. I think he would be very happy to discuss this topic with you. So we can add the additional degrees of freedom by looking at quantum magnets with larger spins. So instead of looking at a spin 1/2 system, we can consider a spin 1 system, for example. 5 minutes. And
I'm sorry, I'm very sorry, you have 15 minutes.
15?
You have 15 minutes.
That's perfect. I thought I have to speed like now, three times faster. All right, sorry. All right, so what we consider is is a spin one magnetic insulator, and you know, because Haldane's model is kind of the first model, we consider a honeycomb lattice. It doesn't necessarily have to be the honeycomb lattice, it can be KTI or whatever. But, you know, we still, although this is kind of a fantasy, we would like to somehow, you know, keep it close to reality, and then instead of just taking a honeycomb lattice, also consider some local environment for these magnetic ions. And this is actually, I think, the most common one when they sit in an octahedral environment, but they could be in a tetrahedral coordination, or actually in the combination of those two, for that matter. And these are actually some of the materials that are honeycomb, that form honeycomb matrices of spin one magnets. And of course, there is many. Some are ordered, some have unconventional magnetism, some show some orbital dimerization, and some are not even characterized yet. And there is many more in the mineral database. It's just, you know, a lot of people didn't think that spin ones are so interesting, I think. But I think recently they are coming back to interest. So let me start with building a Hamiltonian for this. We need to take into account the symmetry properties of this system. And we know that the point group is isomorphic to this, this 3D. And we have the following symmetry elements. For a bond, we have this mirror plane here, and also the inversion symmetry. And then for the sides, we have a threefold rotation and the rotation symmetry, and C2 rotation. This is the axis for that. And of course, we have this sixfold rotation in the middle of this hexagon combined with the mirror symmetry, mirroring on the plane of this honeycomb lattice. And if you take into account the symmetry of this system, we can construct a Hamiltonian. There are other terms as well. I just selected a few of them that are allowed. So we have the usual Heisenberg type of interaction. The Kittyev type of interaction is allowed by the symmetry. Then we can have, sorry, here I think some is missing. We have a Georgian-Skimori interaction on the second neighbor bonds. And then we can have single ion anisotropy because it's a spin one. So this is now allowed. And magnetic field. And there are, of course, some gamma terms and other anisotropies that we don't take them into account now because we just want to start with the most simple model that can still give interesting physics.
Sorry, what does this
1, 1, 1? Yes, yeah, sorry. So now the, we use a rotated reference frame. So these axes here correspond to the X, Y, and Z axis, and the 1, 1, 1 direction is perpendicular to the plane of the honeycomb. Right, so if we start, okay, the colors don't really come out here, but if we start with the simplest possible picture, which is just, you know, to solve the problem for a single ion, then this is the phase diagram that we get. These are the single ion terms. We have the anisotropy on this axis and the magnetic field on the other one. And what we're interested for now in is this pink phase here. When we have a large single ion anisotropy with positive sign, we will select the SZ0 state, naturally, and then the SZ plus minus 1 are going to be the excitations. So the ground state we can write in this product form, and then we have two excitations per site. So for both site A and site B, we can excite a spin up or a spin down. And then, of course, you know, I think it's very easy to see that what we will realize is practically the Kanon-Mayer model, so the double of this Haldane model. We have this spin up part and the spin down part. And because of the Kittyev anisotropy, we can mix these two. So this is not Kramer's pairs, of course, because we have a spin one. And then therefore we can mix these 2 degrees of freedom. All right, but let me start with a simpler case when the Kittyev exchange is zero and there is no magnetic field. So this would actually be just two copies of the up and down system. And what we have is two copies of the Haldane model, if you like, with the same kind of physics. So both these bands are twofold degenerate with the spin degree of freedom. And of course, the finite Georgian-Skimori interaction would gap the system. And then we have topologically non-trivial bands. And I know that now these are twofold degenerate, but let me just go from this angle. We can, because these two parts, the plus one and minus one, don't talk to each other. We can just, you know, solve them separately. And then, of course, this both is just the Haldane model, and can be, you know, cast in this simple form with this D vector that now depends on M, which can be plus one or minus one. And then, of course, when it's topologically non-trivial, then this will form this Kermion. But these two bands, the plus one and minus one, are on top of each other, right? So they would cancel each other. So the total Chern number would be zero. But what is not zero is the C2 topological invariant. Oh, sorry, this one. which is one can just think about as the staggered or the spin chair number. So we take the we subtract the contribution from the minus one to from the plus one, and then you know, because of this, because of the identical contribution from the up and down spins, we would have a zero thermal Hall signal, because the up spins would go to one side of the sample, by the down spins would go to the other side of the sample, and there would be a transverse heat current from the opposite spin components that would cancel each other. But we can have the spin Nernst effect, which measures practically the spin current across this across this sample, and we can calculate the spin Nernst coefficient. Here you just see a contour plot for the for this alpha coefficient as the plotted as the function of the Georgian-Skimory interaction and the temperature. So one can see that when the Georgian-Skimory changes sign, they will be opposite. Okay, so if we switch now on the magnetic field, nothing very new will happen. We just have here in the constant term some minus m times the magnetic field, which practically Zeeman splits these excitations. And from here, I will just go here. But now, because the plus one and minus one bands don't sit on top of each other, we can have a thermal Hall signal, which looks like this. So it's also, oh, sorry, this should be visible. This is the Georgian-Skimory interaction and the magnetic field. So this is not very surprising. And you know, I think maybe the more interesting part is when we have a finite KTF interaction. So this actually is usually sometimes, well, it's usually what people say, you know, the not nice part, because the spin Hall effect is protected by the degeneracy of these Kramers pairs. And because these are not Kramers pairs, I can mix them with anisotropies even without the involvement of magnetic field. But as it turns out, this is not such a big problem, because already the KTF terms, so maybe I don't realize the spin Hall effect if these are allowed, but I can have other kinds of topological insulators, so churnful bands. So this is these were my bands in the magnetic field when the KTF term was zero, and here when the KTF is finite. And what I see is that the churn numbers won't change, because you know, the gap did not close. But now these I cannot label these bands as plus one or minus one, because these are mixed. So that's not a good quantum number anymore. And if I tune the Georgian-Skimory interaction, we can have multiple band touching transitions when the KTF term is finite. And when we come from this part, for example, then at the critical point, we will close the gap in the middle band when these two can exchange topological charge. And then instead of minus one, we will end up with minus three and plus one. And then if I further decrease the Georgian-Skimory interaction, I will close the gap for the lowest two bands. And then, sorry, I will come from the plus one Chern number to the plus three, minus one, and so on. No, sorry, wrong direction. And then, of course, I can close the upper two bands, and then I will end up with the opposite scenario that I started with. So there is actually multiple band-touching transitions that can happen in a system like that. And one can calculate the thermal Hall signal for this material as well, or this scenario as well. And then we can see from this thermal Hall signal that there is this band-touching transition at these points, where actually there is an anomaly in this signal. So this is actually the end of my talk. I don't know whether I really have 5 minutes.
This is not a call salon.
So I think I was maybe too fast. Yes. So what I was trying to convince you about is that spin one magnets maybe are interesting as well, not just the spin one halves, and that we can have various topologically non-trivial phases in the excitation spectrum. And I used the honeycomb antiferromagnet with the KTF anisotropy and single-ion anisotropy and the DM interaction to show different kind of topologically non-trivial excitations that can happen in this system. And then we have time reversal symmetry, and the KTF term is zero, which actually probably can be realized in some, you know, in some materials if you have just correct symmetries that would preserve the SZ as a good quantum number. Then we can have, we can realize the spin-Nernst effect in the excitations of these magnets. And then when we break time reversal symmetry and or have finite KTF interaction, we can also have a Chern insulator. And what's nice about it is that we can have this actually even without the presence of the Gershinsky-Mori interaction. So just coming from the KTF exchange, we can realize the topological non-trivial bands with larger Chern numbers. And this is just an outlook. What we would like to do with this is that because it's spin one magnet, it can have a higher spin quadrupole, for example, states. And the quadrupole state can couple to the electric field because both the electric field and these quadrupoles preserve time reversal symmetry. So we can actually construct some spin-induced polarization, spin polarization for these sites. And if, for example, one can think about a system where you have inversion symmetry on the site, so the coupling between the electric field and the polarization would not happen because of the inversion symmetry, but at the edges of the sample, the inversion is broken. So maybe we could just use this to detect topologically non-trivial excitations and the edge modes in the system just by using this coupling between the field and the electric polarization. So this, with this, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Thank you for finishing on even few minutes before
questions. Bold question. The first one, I guess, is not to your work, but more to the proposal of the Hoshokotsura. So do you know how they realize this pseudo-Kramers degeneracy? As was, how do they ensure that this the pseudo-time reversal actually acts differently on the two layers? Otherwise, if I just take two identical layers of, you know, honeycomb lattice, it's not obvious to me why they should be time reversal pairs.
I guess you ask why they would be pointing in the opposite direction. So there is an antiferromagnetic coupling, I think, between the two layers, and that would ensure the antiparallel configuration of the spins.
I see. So they rely on the degeneracy. Now, the second question is to your talk. Here you realize the same by essentially starting from spin one, then inducing the single site anisotropy that essentially selects one and minus one.
Yes, whether this is reality or not, that I don't know.
Well, so in this respect, what ensures, maybe I missed it, but what ensures that the minus one and plus one have the Berry curvature that's opposite? Is it the way the DM interaction is realized for different MZ values?
Oh, so you mean what ensures that the SZ plus one and minus one will not mix with each other?
Will have opposite Berry curvatures.
So as long as the SZ is a good quantum number, I think they will.
Right, but can I see it? Is it easy to see it from your Hamiltonian? Like, you know, in K-Mali, you do it by hand, so to speak. You say, well, I'm going to do two copies of Haldane model. I'm just going to choose the two chiralities to be opposite for the two bands. But here...
So you know, even for the spin one, the SZ plus one and minus one states are time reversal pairs.
That's right.
So when you apply the time reversal operator, one will go into the other. And this actually is also... So maybe I'm not sure I understand the question completely.
But my question is, does the sign of D, the D vector, is it obvious that when you choose a Z plus one to minus one, that the D also changes sign?
The D vector, this one, does not change sign at all. So you fix the D vector, which is given by your material, whatever. It's a parameter in your system.
Right.
And then in this D vector, this last component depends on M.
Mm-hmm.
So that has opposite sign for the plus.
That's
one.
Exactly
plus
my question. Okay, so it does change sign.
Probably
okay.
I wasn't
very good.
Clear.
Okay.
So the M, this M parameter, it enters this D vector. So this is the same for the two system, aside from this plus minus sign difference.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, This one, actually, the spectrum looks exactly the same for the two, because you take the absolute value of the d, so this will enter on the square.
Exactly.
Right? So it doesn't matter.
Okay. Thanks.
So that's why you can see that they are really degenerate on, sitting on top of each other.
Are there questions, comments? Maybe just a clarification that you were showing basically, I think, on one axis, you were quite quick. On one axis, it was the Zalozensky-Moria.
Yes.
You were showing the plot in absence of Kitaev, the thermal Hall effect. Not
the Nernst effect.
Not this one. This one, which was on one axis, the temperature. So if it is really high temperature, it's... So can you please explain exactly if I go to high temperature, what do I see?
Yes. Okay. So... So if you go to high temperature, I don't actually, so, you know, in theory, we can calculate this as high temperature, the signal as we want, because the temperature only enters in this distribution here. But, you know, for the spin waves, I actually am not sure whether this is valid at any high temperature or not. So, but let's assume that we still have the spin waves and that the ground state remains the same, even at very high temperature, so to speak, and we have the same bands and they will not, you know, decay or disappear or nothing will happen to them, then at very high temperature, because these bands are thermally filled, you fill all of them. So everybody is filled. And why you still have a finite signal is because the ones that have the opposite Chern numbers, they don't have the opposite energy. So you have a factor here that depends on the energy. So that weight comes in here. So this Berry curvature that is opposite for the bands with opposite Chern number will not cancel. So you would still have a finite signal. So as you increase the temperature, you would actually hit a plateau. But in reality, it would not happen because you would destroy the order, whatever order you have, probably.
And what exactly happens at deep plateaus? You know,
Yeah, so this might be actually numerical error because I did the calculation really fast. I think that would be nothing there.
So you have these really beautiful examples for the quantum Hall effect and quantum spin Hall effect in these magnon insulators. I was wondering, I mean, in electronic systems, you know, nowadays it's a whole zoo of different kinds of topological phases that band structures that you can have. Do you envision kind of being able to realize some of these other phases maybe in magnon systems in the future, or is it restricted maybe to
Other phases, you mean, like?
Like, you know, some of these, I don't know, higher order, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, topological band structures.
Oh, the higher order,
like crystalline, you know, band structures or things like that. Or...
Yeah, the honest answer is I don't know. Probably yes. That's a good question.
Yes, please.
So this is a very peripheral question, but. Yeah, I mean, you talked about the thermal Hall effect measurement in lutetium vanadate, and given that both you and Rose are here together, although Rose is not paying attention, but good. And she's worked on. So I was just wondering. I thought the conclusion of some of that work was that it implied a very large value of the Delashinsky-Maria interaction, which can't act. So the more realistic value, I believe, can't actually account for the thermal Hall effect. And I was just wondering if either of you could say anything about what the status of that is.
Okay. Are you saying that the Delashinsky-Maria in that material is too small to actually have...
So it seems. I mean...
Yes. So it was about 8% of the J. That's what it was about 8% of the J. That's what we found from up initial type of calculations.
Right. I don't know how that would... So I know that the thermal Hall signal in general is, as you can see from here, is proportional to the Berry curvature. And then, you know, probably you have more of that when the Delashinsky-Moria is larger. So you would expect for the Delashinsky-Moria large signal. And I don't know whether, you know, but... Whether this is,
yeah.
Well, you briefly mentioned the spin-Nernst effect. As we're coming to an end, people might not have the chance to catch Andreas. Do you want to say a word or two quickly about that?
Oh, the spin-Nernst effect. Yeah, sure. So, right, because, for example, when you have, let me go back to which injection was it? This one. So, for a system where you have time reversal symmetry, and these bands are twofold degenerate with the spin degree of freedom, so you have the plus one and minus one sitting on top of each other with the same, with opposite Chern numbers and opposite Berry curvatures, you would expect that you are at a given temperature, right? So you start filling this band. You fill equally, because they have the same energy, the band which has a spin plus one and the spin minus one. And therefore, you would expect that an equal amount of spin up and the spin down, quasi-particle, would go to the left and to the right. And therefore, you would have a thermal Hall effect from the upspin, coming to this side, which is equal to the thermal Hall effect going to the other side from the spin down states, and these would cancel each other. And also, you know, if you think about it, then this kappa coefficient for the thermal Hall. So you can think about it from time reversal breaking, symmetry breaking as well. So that coefficient breaks time reversal symmetry, and it cannot be observed. Therefore, when the magnetic field is zero, or you don't have this KTF type of or any kind of interaction. So what you need to instead of measuring the energy current across the sample, what you measure is the spin separation, so the spin current, which is if you think so this expression doesn't so much differ from the thermal Hall. What happens is that you have this M here, which is also the plus one and minus one, so you practically calculate the staggered thermal Hall effect. And this coefficient, this C1, is not exactly the C2, but it's not so very far, right? So it's essentially that.
So on the reality side, is that actually useful? So is this the kind of thing people actually want to do in spintronics, to be able to separate spins like that?
The spin-Nernst effect, you mean? Or yeah, I think it would be useful.
Yeah, so my question is, very often in electronic topological phases, you know, there's topological band and there are non-topological degrees of freedom, and they may or may not interfere with the physics that topology cares. So in these systems, is it similar or very different? You know, do these, spin-based band structures of the coupled to other phonons and other degrees of freedom, and how,
sure.
When you talk about thermal Hall effect, there are other things that may contribute to it. So how?
Of course, yes.
One can separate those two.
Okay, so I wasn't looking at how one can separate, and of course you can have all kinds of things happen, right? So you can have contributions from phonons, if you want, and magnets can even interact with each other, so to speak, and these things in this example, we didn't take any of that into account. So, you know, it would be worse probably to look at it, you know, because in experiment, one can not measure, I think, this one without additional effects. Yes.
The hope is that they decouple somehow.
That would be the hope, but I think, you know, that's, I think, more like the fantasy part, not really.
Larger spin. So you did now all this nice work for spin one, but now one can think whether you can extend that to larger spin and whether most of what you find could be retained or you are maybe having new effects there. Have you thought about that, or is it an interesting problem to look at?
To me it is.
There are many spin 3/2 systems.
Yes,
and,
I know. I was thinking, because I was also working on some cobalt related materials,
so
and those are multi-parallel
systems
of them. So in those systems, I think it would be interesting, especially because this the property of being magnetoelectric multiferric, and then you know you can think about the electrical activity of these non-trivial topological excitations and so on. So I think yes, and yes, probably you know this can be achieved in larger spin quantum magnets, as long as you take into account all the local degrees of freedom, which is three.
Okay, I think we close the discussion here. We thank us Judith again, and we move to the final talk.